Ladies and gentlemen,
you want experience during your football season? Well, buckle up, sweet cheeks.
That's all we need.
We've got all the experience in the world. This is I Want Your Flex with Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon. Mike and Dan break down everything you need to set your lineups. From position rankings to starts and sits, the guys help you make those hard decisions. And now, let's get your flex on. Here's Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon.
The NFC deceased has life. What do you know? Thursday night football, an NFC East matchup, providing us some excitement, Mike, as Washington holds on for a thrilling victory over the New York Giants, gets their record to 1-1. Well, the Giants have to head back to the Big Apple, 0-2 to start this season. But Thursday night football, before we get to those marquee games, provided us a lot of excitement on Thursday.
Well, anytime you can get a Thursday night game, much maligned, right? Oh, it's Giants and Washington, whatever. And for fantasy purposes, not a lot of folks would have been in your lineup. I was in one matchup where it was 4-3. I got the lead going into the weekend with Washington over the Giants. Right? We both played our defenses and neither really did a whole lot of anything except get called for penalties. And then, obviously, the one interception from Heinicke. But it was a thrilling game. The overall takeaway from a football perspective is both coaching staffs went in not to lose, and they showed no faith in their quarterbacks, who had otherwise been fantastic all night.
Yeah, the Daniel Jones running show was something. I mean, it truly was. And then you have the pass to Darius Slayton that, I'm sorry, I understand what Twitter is all about. But to hear people say, you know what, that one's kind of on Jones.
And, no.
And
no.
Like, I understand that the ball may have been like, you know, on The Price is Right, they have the target game where you gotta say, I need three of the ruffles, and then it's $3.99, and it comes out to like $11.97, and Drew Carey puts the bullseye on the board, and you gotta get it between $10 and $12. This throw was basically around the $10 mark. It may not have been right at 12 or 11 smack dab in the middle, but it's there where you win and you leave with your trip to Colorado. Like, that's where the pass was. That is all on Darius Slayton. I have no idea on why you could say, well, he kind of overthrew him. It hit him in his entire right hand. You have to catch that if you're a professional wide receiver.
That is just preseason Daniel Jones hate. You've got residual hate for a game you lost gambling or fantasy-wise, or you're a Giants fan that we're blaming him for that, because that is completely on Slayton. By the way, go back and look at some of the other catches in his career for Darius Slayton. The guy can go get the ball.
Sure.
We've seen it. And, you know, that was on him, completely on him. Danny Dimes threw a beautiful pass. Yeah, you could argue about the aesthetics of did it need a little air under it, whatever, and let him run under it. Right, it was a huge separation between he and the defender, but that's a play Slayton's got to make. He's a professional receiver, for crying out loud.
Daniel Jones was dropping dimes, and so was Darius Slayton. They just mean two different things. That's what it meant for the New York Giants. Listen, this is my big takeaway, and you mentioned it. There maybe wasn't a lot of action fantasy-wise, but if you did play Terry McLaurin in a PPR league, you're very, very happy with what happened on Thursday night. If you had Antonio Gibson like I did in one of my leagues, maybe not so happy.
You cursed J.D. McKissick when he ran into the end zone. Yes, you do.
Yes, you do. And then there's the trials and tribulations of Saquon Barkley. And I know that there were fantasy owners that didn't play Barkley this week.
Sure.
They're still cautious, especially after what happened in week one, and not sure what you're going to get. And I don't fault that at all. But now we're 2 weeks in, and I feel that some Saquon Barkley owners feel that the sky is falling. And here's my takeaway and my message to you is, don't trade Saquon Barkley right now. You will not find a time where his value is lower than what it could possibly be. No one wants to buy any stock in Saquon Barkley, so why you would trade him at this point doesn't make any sense. Plus, if you drafted him in the first round or in the second round, you also likely had to know the risk that Saquon Barkley likely wasn't going to be playing in week one, and maybe his status for week two was in question. You got a bonus that he went out and played against Denver in week one, and you got a bonus that he got 13 carries on a short week on the road against a Washington team that is one of the better defensive fronts we've seen in football. So I know the 41-yard run was a majority of the 57 yards that he had, but again, this is all gravy if you drafted him in the first round. And then looking ahead, Mike, the final point is this. Next five games for the Giants, and I know looking on the schedule you're saying, well, you know, Denver and Washington, maybe not the murderer's row. I would disagree. Denver's, with Vic Fangio's defense, that's something that I think is not ideal to go up against in week one. And we talked about Washington's front four. But in the next 5 weeks, you have games against the Falcons, Saints, Cowboys, Rams, and Panthers. Maybe the Rams game a little dicey, Saints game maybe as well. But Falcons, Cowboys, and Panthers, three out of the next 5 weeks. Do not trade Saquon Barkley. That's my big takeaway from Thursday night.
Yeah, because even with the Rams, you know, not to get too inside, Dan, I've ranted on this on Fox Sports Radio all week and on Twitter at Swollen Dome. Is a lot of folk commenting on the Sunday night game. I'm convinced we're doing something else and didn't actually watch Sunday night's game. Because David Montgomery had a great game. The Bears overall, the offense moved the ball against the vaunted Rams defense. And then Nagy got cute, brought in Justin Fields. Darnell Mooney runs a wrong route that becomes an interception. And look, they all count just the same. But the point is, I don't even think that necessarily, at least in the current space as we sit here readying for week two, is necessarily the worst of matchups that you'll see. My one thing to take away is both of these quarterbacks are going to be fantasy viable for you over the course of the season. Right? Heinicke, We saw him come in, you know, Fitzpatrick goes down to the IR, and we saw a little of it last year, right? We got a little glimpse, and you come in against the Giants, and again, not a top-rated defense, but 34 of 46, 336, the two scores, the pass to Seals Jones was fantastic. Go up and get it. He may have been trying to throw it away, and the big mitts of Seals Jones caught it. Either way, it's a touchdown. It counts just the same. And Terry McLaurin, as you said, is a bad, bad man. And J.D. McKissic, 80 balls last year, 5 for 83 in this game. There's going to be some days where they fling the ball around the yard. Now, you mentioned Daniel Jones, 9 carries, 95 yards, had that touchdown call back. We could fight about whether it was truly holding or not, but the point is nearly 100 yards and a score, and 249 and one should have been two with Slayton, and woulda, shoulda, couldas, but he moved the ball and spread the ball around, and Shepard and Slayton, the guys that were already there, had the big games between them, 16 targets and 12 catches. So I think there are going to be big days ahead for bye week purposes, injury purposes, and, you know, there's going to be that tough matchup. Not yet, because that's one of the big things going into week two is, you know, the studs and playing and all that stuff, but, you know, they're going to be a tough time where we decide, you know what, it's time to flip the script, and Daniel Jones is going to get that call to your starting position.
Washington gets the win, 30-29, crazy ending. What a way to start off week two. I will say this, because I just want to rebuttal against the Rams thing, and I'm not saying that you're wrong about the David Montgomery thing, but I would say just about the Rams defense, I'd even agree with you, Mike, if you went as far as to say that, you know, Raheem Mostert, we'll get to him a little bit later, Morris taking over the defense, that maybe there is something that's a little different from Brandon Staley's defense, but I'm not ready to downgrade the Rams defense even after the 100-yard game from David Montgomery.
No, I can agree. I can stipulate to that, but I also don't. I think to some degree we've blindly, not you and I, but as a collective, just said, well, they were dominant last year, so it's just going to roll up. Mm-hmm. And the Bears moved the ball, even behind an offensive line that was spotty coming in. Because I talked about it a lot, watching the preseason and seeing what they were lining up, and yet they were still able to bust off some plays in the run game.
I have the Rams defense in one of my leagues. I think that there's going to be opportunities. Mm-hmm. We'll see. It'll play out. I actually like the Colts a lot this weekend in week two, in a bounce back game for them, and Rams going on the road. I digress. We'll get into
that. Absolutely. Yeah.
the matchups that we have. We've got what looked to be a great Sunday night affair about 3 weeks ago. I'm not sure how great it's going to be with the Chiefs traveling to Baltimore. Monday night, you've got an angry Packers team against the Detroit Lions coming to Green Bay. I'm not sure how that's going to work out. So you may have to try to find your entertainment in the 1 o'clock Eastern and 4:05 Eastern and 4:25 Eastern kicks in week two. But if Thursday night's any indication of what we've got some good stuff ahead. Let's get to Mike's good stuff, the top five players you want to play at each position, quarterback, running back, and wide receiver. Mike, who is 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 at the quarterback position entering week two?
Running them down real quick. Give me Kyler Murray against that Minnesota defensive secondary. I expected better from their defensive front. They were toothless in week one, and that means a lot of exposure as Kyler Murray throws the ball around the yard. Patrick Mahomes against Baltimore. I think I might just caveat him out. I used to write columns where I'd do all these long, you know, here's my top tens and whatever. And if a guy was just a Ronco set it and forget it guy, I'd just throw him off to the side. When we do this verbally, it gets a little harder to do that.
I did a golf pool with my buddy about 20 years ago, and the only stipulation was you couldn't draft Tiger. Like, that's so.
Well,
so
having kind of designed like, those games, Dan, we actually had rules of how many times you could use Tiger.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, so you'd have, say, I think what it was, 36 tournaments were on the calendar or thereabouts, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, the first half, you could only use him in half the tournament, so 9 out of 18. Wow. Likewise, in racing, you could only use Dale Earnhardt Jr. in 9 of 18. Because otherwise, people would put them, because you had to do it by grouping. So you'd have, you know, a group that were the A list, the B list, and the C list, and you'd pick 1, 2, and 1. And nobody would ever move Tiger or Dale Earnhardt Jr. So we had to kind of promote activity. And if you left him in your lineup, you got a zero.
Well, I'll tell you what, they were dominant enough where I think it's worthwhile. Mahomes is magnificent, but I still like to see where Mahomes ends up because he's not number one every week.
No.
Like, he got Murray number one this week, so it's always good to judge. And there is always a sense of pride, and this is why one of the reasons why we do this, Mike, is because there's nothing like listening to a podcast and knowing that Kyler Murray is your quarterback. And hearing Mike Harmon say he's my top quarterback this week, like, it just feels good. It just feel like, even you know that the matchup is juicy, but it just feels good to have your guy be atop the ring.
Well, just to have that confirmation, and also to have someone to blame, because I said it when it goes wrong at Swollen Dome. But yeah, Baltimore crumbling, right? Losing Westry in the secondary. Saw the injury on Monday, confirmed later in the week. So he's got issues. He's going to miss time. We've already seen depletion with Peters out, Smith looking to get him back. On the offensive line, Stanley's now banged up, and we watched the right tackle get abused in week one. So, yeah, for Patrick Mahomes and company, you're licking your chops after what was already a thrilling week one against Cleveland. Number three, your guy Russell Wilson going up against Tennessee. Tennessee was, to me, the most disappointing effort of week one. Perhaps they show some heart, found the wizard coming in, but Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf and company, I think there's another big day on tap there. Tom Brady against Atlanta. The recency since 28-3 is certainly there. I like that he's got all the swagger and bravado. And Atlanta's defense against Philly in week one confirmed exactly what I thought. They're going to be terrible on that side of the ball. And Brady's got all his weapons. That'll be one of the 3 points, right? The three things at the end as we talk about cautionary tales with that squad. But what you can know is that Brady will load up points. And then number five, I go with a little bit of a price shot. Again, looking at what's all surrounding a team, I'm going to take Justin Herbert. Over 300 passing yards last week, only one touchdown. Here he's got a juicy matchup against a Dallas squad that's got some issues on their defensive front. And doing it in front of the home crowd, even though most people will be clad with Dallas stars.
I had concerns about Herbert in the week one matchup, not about Herbert overall. We talked about quarterbacks at the start of the season and the preseason. He was in the top eight in rising fast and the throw. And now look, I know what Daniel Jones just did against Washington. But still, to have that Chargers line play as well as it did, you mentioned it in the podcast earlier this week that we did, and to have him throw for over 300, 330 against the Washington defense made me feel a little bit more comfortable about just Justin Herbert is going to be a set it and forget it guy. I think if he's on fantasy rosters, I'm completely 100% sold with what they're going to do.
Yeah, you mentioned the offensive line, and I don't want to go into the full Northwestern thing, but you saw what they did against Washington, and they ran 83 plays. And I wonder, you know, just to tag the analysis of the Thursday night game, how much that played into the Thursday night game, the amount of reps, because Chase Young went off the field a couple of times as that game went on.
Yeah, Justin Herbert was 337 yards, 31 of 47 in that game against Washington. Those are Mike's top five quarterbacks. You heard him say it. Get him on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me, Dan Beyer, on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. Let's get to your top running backs for week 2, 1 through 5.
Give me a little bit of love. Dalvin Cook out of Minnesota with his 26 touches week 1. Expect him to be up and around that total again if they're going to get back into the proverbial winner's circle. You look at what he is as a receiver. I think that's going to be the thing that puts him over the top here. And that also means that you get your usual entry of Christian McCaffrey, the receiving yards and targets and catches week in, week out, going up against New Orleans defensive front that they like to bring it, and they're going to try to rush Sam Darnold. What does that mean? Hot route! Get the ball out fast and make some plays. That's actually one of the games that I like for a potential upset. From a straight picks perspective, it is a weird week, Dan. I think there's a lot of potential chaos here. And for me, on my 1-900 lose my ass challenge, I might be walking like from here to Chicago by time this game series of games is up, because there's no gimmies.
Just make it back for the podcast next week, because otherwise it's just going to be Lee and I, and Lee's going to have to do the heavy lifting.
Okay.
God knows I do. I don't.
No. You're a brilliant and dominant man. Lee would have to look out for the how much Russell Wilson time there is. number 3, Alvin Kamara, going up on the other side of that matchup. 20 carries, 4 targets in week 1. I would expect more activity in the passing game as we go forward with Kamara. But certainly the touches are there. Carolina's still finding itself defensively, so I think some opportunities. Number 4, Najee Harris, a little bit of a price shot for you. Las Vegas losing a couple of players on that defensive front coming out of their Monday night glorious victory in Allegiant Stadium. And then number 5, Aaron Jones going up against the Detroit Lions. Lions gave up about, 29 points in week 1 to running backs. And let's face it, 11-point favorites embarrassed in week 1 would be the kind way to say it. I don't think they bury the Lions altogether, but this one I think is going to be a high-scoring affair.
Aaron Jones's performance against the Saints was completely lost because all we wanted to talk about was Jameis Winston and Aaron Rodgers.
Sure.
I mean, it was absolute positively non-factor for Aaron Jones in week 1. And you would expect that to bounce back. I don't know if everybody's going to bounce back against the Lions, if it's going to be Rodgers, Adams, and Jones, but I think that the Jones drop-off should be something that was talked about, but it just got lost in all the quarterback mayhem over the last...
That's it. You get blown out. The run game just goes away. 5 attempts, 9 yards, just a couple of catches. And that was the surprise, right, that the reception total as that game got out of hand, they didn't at least go to the hot route. As Lee Delap, I think he lost hair since Monday, the more he thought about it, as I look across the glass. What a weird game that was, and the narratives that start flowing out of it.
Yeah, and Mike, I did a thing for the network, for Fox Sports Radio. I've had this in my mind for a little while, and I developed an MVP pyramid.
Look at you.
You could have rankings, but I think it looked better in pyramid style to see who was on top, who was at the next level.
Yeah, and it sets it up for a game show.
Yeah, yes, it does.
Let's play pyramid.
So I had Kyler Murray number 1 after week 1. I put him, if you had to give out the NFL MVP after week 1, I would have given it to Kyler Murray. But I didn't even put Jameis Winston in my top 10. And I went back and forth about it, Mike, but I'm like, I know he threw 5 touchdowns, but it's kind of like wins in Major League Baseball to me a little bit, of throwing those touchdowns. It's, you know, there's this, the Saints for how much they dominated. I don't think it was just solely because of Jameis Winston. And when they scored, he just happened to be the one throwing the touchdown passes. And I just and so in looking at how that game played out, maybe I'm not giving Jameis Winston as much of credit as I should, but we talked about him, and we really talked about Aaron Rodgers this past week. But Aaron Jones was just kind of lost in the shuffle, and it's safe to say Aaron Jones did not make the pyramid after week one.
Well, but it's fair to go a little bit, dig a little deeper, as it were. I could start singing it from Princess and the Frog. You don't know that one yet, Dan, no. But you will eventually. But the fact of the matter is you're looking at the other outside of the 55-yard pass, and I know it's dangerous to do this, but the other 13 receptions or completions from Jameis Winston went for 93 yards.
Yeah.
Not exactly a world-beating – like the five touchdowns just pops off the page and the big, fat zero in the interception column, because that's what we're going to watch with Jameis Winston from a football perspective,
yeah,
on a week-to-week basis. So the anytime that's a zero and a nice round number, we're feeling good. And he didn't get sacked. Zeros in those categories are going to be brilliant. But the five touchdowns, you can't say five touchdowns misleading, but I think it's misleading. Because the tale of the game is the New Orleans defense and what they did to Aaron Rodgers, and that offense that you expected to come in and at least put up a fight.
All right, let's get to your top five wide receivers, because I did have a wide receiver make my MVP pyramid. Mike, who are your top five wide receivers for week two?
That's exciting. Number one against the depleted Baltimore secondary. Let's go, Tyreek Hill.
Yes, he was
the
one.
Just fire him up, right? If I'm Patrick Mahomes, I think first down, your first possession. All right, let's see who wants to pretend to cover you. And then DeAndre Hopkins, a couple of big catches in week one, going up against the Minnesota secondary. Again, I like it on paper, the Minnesota defense eventually, but clearly not there yet. And while Kyler Murray, atop your pyramid, has the hot hand, let's go. Devontae Adams looking for that bounce back again. I think Detroit has some teeth to them. I like the way they fought after getting buried early by San Francisco. And but for a couple of steps, you know, it might have been a little bit of a different game when you talk about what Swift was doing in the backfield, et cetera. But I'm looking for Devontae Adams to have the bounce back. Calvin Ridley, also a bounce back game, a pedestrian week one effort as the Falcons were absolutely obliterated by the Eagles. But going up against Tampa Bay, they're down a couple of pieces in the secondary, and those don't just pop up like another running back. So, you know, Murphy Bunting's departure and Whiteside before the game in week one. Like, those are things that are going to be there. And I think Ridley has the opportunity to have a nice big bounce back game. That, and maybe I'm just desperately clinging to my preseason ranking of him, of just desperation points coming up big. And then I had Herbert at five on the quarterback side. Give me stats for days. Keenan Allen against that Dallas secondary to have himself a big day. Mike Williams will get some targets. Austin Eckler will get some looks out of the backfield, but Keenan Allen will be your stat leader out of that game.
Tyreek Hill, you have number one, and as I mentioned, he made the MVP pyramid because I think he actually was the reason. Mahomes, great numbers. Travis Kelce, you know, gets into the end zone. He has great numbers as well, but it was the bomb to Tyreek Hill that was kind of the backbreaker, and his numbers, again, outstanding. DeAndre Hopkins, Kyler Murray was atop my pyramid, sure, as I mentioned, as the top MVP guy. And the Cardinals are such an interesting story because I'm not ready yet to believe in them. But there was a lot that went right in that game against Tennessee. And we have this Minnesota team, as you said, coming in after their loss to Cincinnati. There could be options, but DeAndre Hopkins just did basically picked up where he left off from a year ago.
Doing DeAndre Hopkins things. What's going to be curious as the season goes on, to go into Arizona just a little bit more, especially when we've got those big numbers coming out for Kyler Murray and for DeAndre Hopkins. The run game still waiting to see exactly what that becomes. You're not going to have a double-digit sack total, so that's certainly going to be a different animal. I did like the way Chandler Jones and Kyler Murray were going back and forth, like, you know, big brother, little brother kind of digs and whatever. I thought they were going to start playing dozens at some point, which would have been fun. But you look at Christian Kirk, who had a couple of huge plays for them. A.J. Green, target-wise, is there, and he's got, like, as you go through the secondary and where he'll likely line up, there may be a matchup to play there. That would be a daily fantasy league where I spend my dollar, you know, as the last guy on my roster or something. But for fantasy purposes, he's a guy to give a look-see. There's just a lot of guys getting fed in that Arizona wide receiving core, but certainly DeAndre Hopkins is always going to get his double-digit target count.
And you had Keenan Allen at number five. I'm just going to say this. This may be a tease for my Give Me One Reason segment. May not be the only Charger wide receiver we talk about today. So stay tuned. Stay tuned. Could see it later on. Get Mike again on Twitter at Swollen Dome. Find me on Twitter at Dan Byer on Fox. Mike, let's get to the hot plays for week two. Guys that may not have made the top five, but are definitely worth a play this weekend.
Hot plays.
Lock and load. I'm still on the Lamar Jackson bandwagon. I know folks are diving off based on a couple of fumbles. And while they may not bench him entirely, they're not feeling good about it. You know, he's just outside of the top five. He's sitting at number seven as I go into my rankings. And maybe I'll take a long walk on the beach here in Southern California. And maybe I'll change my mind. Maybe I'll play Hello by Lionel Richie like he did in that music video so long ago. And maybe I'll come to some other, you know, piece of existence that takes me to change it. But I'm still looking at him with his running potential, with the fact that if it plays to script, they're going to be down. You're going to find Andrews. You're going to get Williams out of the backfield, or Devontae Freeman now that he's being called up. I'm not telling you to start Devontae Freeman. Don't do it. Stash him at the end of your bench and watch and see if he gets any kind of look. But Latavius Murray's still going to be in there as a sledgehammer. But I think Lamar will still put up some points. Joe Burrow against Chicago. I think Chicago takes care of Cincinnati from a straight picks perspective, but Burrow with those wide receivers, and now that Jamar Chase has figured out the NFL ball, I think that was all a rope-a-dope. He wasn't getting enough attention. Just notice then T. Higgins said, I want to change my number because I don't want to be Ocho Cinco part two. All sorts of stupidity. But Joe Mixon, while he's healthy, also helps move the needle. So Joe Burrow, a guy on the back end of my QB1s. Running back, go the other side. Montgomery, mentioned him before. Again, so much lost in the fact of Matthew Stafford and those big throws. Montgomery was one of five running backs to go over 100 yards in week one. Then we got Deebo Samuel, 109 yak. Yeah, that's right, 109 yards after the catch in week one. Look for him to be sprinting again. I'm curious as to what Philly really is.
Yeah, me too.
Week one didn't really tell me anything.
Yeah, he yacked up the ball near the end of the game, and it almost cost him against the Lions. But just got to clean that up. Eagles are a little bit more physical, so we'll see if that translates. But yeah, for as much as I love Philadelphia, I do agree with you that the jury is still somewhat out.
Yeah, that was a pretty good use of the word yak there. Spoken like a man with a little child. And then finally, Clyde Edwards-Helaire against Baltimore. He's not the sexiest name anymore, but he is the lead back in an explosive offense. So I'm reticent. You know, some are starting to dive off already. I see it in the rankings across our industry, and they're just, there's a little bit of hand-wringing because the big plays seem to go back to the wide receivers and Kelce. It's like, don't forget, you're still one slip tackle away from greatness given his speed.
Well, you and I may have a Clyde Edwards-Helaire conversation later on in this program, but we will save that till later. Let's get to the cold sores for week two. Guys, you want to stay away from, you don't want to touch, you don't want to see, you don't want anything to do with.
Cold sores.
Dak against that Chargers front. Look, you're still going to start him, but this is one where you're tempering expectations a little bit because that offensive line concerns me. And I'd like what they did in week one against Tampa when the Cowboys kind of used the page out of, well, the Steelers of last year, some of the other teams. Let's just make the passing game. It's an extended run edition. Short, intermediate throws, get it out, high percentage completion, let guys run. Maybe you'll see more of Ezekiel Elliott, and maybe that's how Ezekiel Elliott folks can put the paper bags that they're, you know, kind of hyperventilating into. They can put those down because maybe they'll get some of those PPR numbers going forward. Afraid of Jameis part two. We already talked about it. I don't know what that is. 148-5. That is a very odd stat line. Again, keep it clean, it'll be good. But on the road at Carolina, I want to see a repeat before I'm thrusting him into my starting lineup. Miles Sanders going up against San Francisco. Gainwell had some work as well. But again, it was a bad Atlanta team. Looking at Sanders here against the San Francisco front, pretty good against the run as we get things started. But speed guy, all it needs is one. So he's more a back-end number two for me. Josh Jacobs going up against that Pittsburgh front. You don't really learn much against Buffalo when we're talking about Singletary and Zach Moss being a healthy scratch in terms of their battles against the run. But we know the run defense is historically strong. And the Raiders, with some depletion of that offensive line, I'm not convinced that we get a repeat of Monday night heroics. Julio Jones against Seattle. Again, I don't know what he is. Target count certainly wasn't there in week one, even in an obliteration situation. So we push that away. And then Corey Davis against New England. I like Zach Wilson. I think there's going to be some days, but I'm lowering the ceiling here against the New England defense because Bill Belichick generally eats young quarterbacks for lunch, and I don't think Zach Wilson's going to escape that.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. I'm not a big fan of nobody should be a big fan of the Jets running backs right now, and now without Mekhi Becton, you talked about how Zach Wilson was kind of taking that beating, and yeah, going up against New England, now an angry New England team.
That's right.
Yeah, not too happy with that. All right, let's get to our
Fantasy Ninja.
Yes, you got it. The Ninjas for week two of our fantasy football season in the NFL.
Give me Darrell Henderson against Indianapolis. Got the touchdown, but I think there's a bigger role for him here because I don't know that it can be any easier passing against the secondary than what Matt Stafford saw in week one against the Bears, which I think means more balance as we go through. Elijah Mitchell, you know, everybody picked him up on the waiver wire. Go ahead and start him. Right, he's going to have part of the workload at a minimum. I don't know what Trey Sermon is going to be, if he's going to be a healthy scratch again, or if he suddenly becomes a 25-carry guy. I don't know if Shanahan's going to pull the old Belichick, because we're going to get to Belichick and decision-making here in a moment. But you're also looking at Hasty in the backfield. You got a lot of potential mouths to feed, but it would seem that Mitchell, after that week one performance, at least earns the opportunity for a repeat as Mostert goes to IR. And this is just my little the public service announcement. If you're one of those folks that's tweeting at a team, at a player, the player's family, any of that after an injury or bad performance, get a life. Really, find something else to channel your energy into. Maybe, you know, run an extra couple of miles on the treadmill. Go for a nice walk in the neighborhood.
Noted. No, I'm just kidding.
Like Mostert gets hurt for the year and his family is, you know, people are sending him the worst of worst. And then, you know, that happened in the Thursday night game as well after the defensive offsides led to a re-kick and the untimed down that allowed Washington to escape. It's not that serious, folks. You'll make more money if you lost at betting or on your fantasy team. Damian Harris, to that end, a guy who fumbled last week and saw all of that. Historically, Bill Belichick goes away from those guys for a while. They're in the doghouse. I don't know that he's got another running back that he can use as a hammer right now. Yeah, James White will get his numbers as a receiver out of the backfield. But let me give you two quarterbacks to finish it off. Big Ben against Las Vegas, I think. The offense has a better day. People looking at the numbers. Remember, Buffalo's defense is pretty good.
Pretty good.
And then finally, Teddy Two Gloves. Teddy Bridgewater against Jacksonville. This is one of those, if I were doing a gambling segment, I'd be pulling out my giant boot and laying it on the desk because I'm looking for Vic Fangio to have a feast and for Teddy Bridgewater. He might have one of those Jameis Winston-like numbers from last week. you know, 150-5 when it's all said and done.
I like both of those quarterbacks and how they're going to fare in the win column this upcoming weekend. We talked a bit about just kind of the Raiders hangover in the last podcast of you're expecting a lot of them to play that emotional game on Monday night and then travel to play a Sunday 1 o'clock Eastern time kick against Pittsburgh, a physical Pittsburgh team. I just think that's a lot. And yeah, I think Denver's good. In my preseason pick, you know, predictions, now that it's out on a limb, I did put them in the playoffs. I think I had them as the 7th seed, but for what they showed against the Giants, and hey, the Giants showed a little something on Thursday night against Washington. I think that's going to carry over. And I also don't think that Jacksonville will have the garbage time stats that they got in Houston, which is something that we'll touch on the end of the show. But those were Mike's ninjas for week two. I will say this, T. Higgins, maybe since the NFL is allowing everybody to just wear whatever number they want, maybe go letters and he could just wear T.
You could just do that.
You could just be T. Higgins wearing the letter T instead. It would make it a lot easier. And honestly, Mike, may look better than some of the single digits numbers that we have. I never thought that it would actually bother me. I have no problem with it in college, maybe because I'm used to it in college. I was so confused at times in watching games on Sunday. I swear the Arizona Cardinals have 20 guys who are in single digits. I mean, it's everybody. It's Kyler Murray. It's Rondale Moore. It's Chase Edmonds. It's James Conner. Like, everybody now is wearing a single. Buda Baker's wearing a single. I'm so confused with the new single digits allowed in various positions.
And that's the thing, Dan. We pride ourselves on, you know, knowing the numbers. It's guys, that's their identity at the pro level. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, what is that guy on the field, or is a running back or wide receiver suddenly, you know, as we're watching the game at SoFi, Damian Williams, right, comes over Kansas City after sitting out last year. It's like, number eight's in? Who's number eight? Isn't that a quarterback number? What are we normally doing here? And all of a sudden, well, there you go. I mean, just one of many examples of playmakers. But certainly quarterbacks have talked about it a bunch, right? A bunch of veteran quarterbacks, Brady and others. And I'd love to see what the rule truly is as written out, Dan. Because, look, a lot of these guys don't sell a lot of merch. So it wouldn't be a big cost to just keep bouncing around. So if you decide there is truly a competitive advantage, it might be worth the money spent to just every 3 weeks change your number.
Hey, it can't be any more confusing than it already is. You know, might as well just try to confuse us some more with it. I do have to say one thing off the heels of your hot plays, cold sores, and ninjas, Mike, because I forgot to do this last week, and it's something that I want to make note of. No, I'm not talking about the MVP pyramid, which you're going to get every single week from me.
I dig that. At Dan Byer on Fox.
What we used to do, Mike, when we did the show on Sunday mornings talking fantasy, remember my never will be a Super Bowl matchup?
Like, yes.
There are certain cross-conference games that will never be a Super Bowl. It's not going to happen just because, listen, we all love football, and there is just not going to be a matchup in the Super Bowl with a certain two teams. Now, if the 49ers were taking on the Buffalo Bills, a pick that Chris Berman made for years and years and years, there's still a chance that could be a Super Bowl, even though it never came to fruition. But like week one, the Jets taking on the Panthers, I'm sorry, there is never going to be a Super Bowl that is the Jets taking on the Panthers. So I can do this in most weeks. I can't do it in week 18 because it's all divisional matchups. But every week, there's usually, and I only will do it with cross-conference matchups, there's usually a game or two. And as much as we make fun of the Cowboys, I still could maybe see a Cowboys-Chargers Super Bowl. Rams and Colts. Rams may be in the Super Bowl this year, and who knows if the Colts turn it around. So I'm sorry, Mike.
Yeah.
Bears-Bengals. Never, ever going to be a Super Bowl. They've both been there, but it's just been spaced out enough where I don't think we could really worry about them crossing and then meeting in a game. So my not going to be a Super Bowl game for week two, never will be a Super Bowl, Bengals taking on the Bears.
Thanks, pal. Get in right now, $114 as you and I record the podcast, as the first Bears home game, and everybody excited to see Joe Burrow come to town.
It may be a win. That's and it's a season opener, so all the more reason to go to Chicago. All right, speaking of reasons, yeah, it's my time to do
Let's
this.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
Give me one reason.
All right, yes, I will give you one reason to start a guy and one reason to bench a guy. The reason that I'm going to give you to start Chargers wide receiver Mike Williams is this. His 8 catches last week were a career high. Amazing, but they were a career high for Mike Williams. So that tells me, Mike, this is a different Chargers team. It's a different Chargers player. This is a different Chargers quarterback. Justin Herbert, we kind of praised him earlier. I think Mike Williams continues with his success. And for everybody who took a chance on him, I think you're going to reap the benefits and the rewards as long as he stays healthy. And it's week 2, so why not put the chips in right now? I'm saying start Mike Williams in week 2 because his career high in catches last week show you that things are different in LA.
I like the cut of your jib. A guy that we've been waiting on to give you consistent production. I don't know how many, like if you just piled up, like it was actually stock certificates, Dan. He has been on so many of my teams. And there have been weeks where it's been fantastic and others like, come on, man. Why is he not involved? And then you look at where you shift, right? Anthony Lynn goes off to Detroit, and we can dissect that offense till we're blue in the face. But if you get down, it's pretty easy to dissect. As for the Chargers, Joe Lombardi quite clearly knows what he's got in Justin Herbert, especially if he's going to be behind that wall of 5. Yeah, there's going to be opportunities down the field. So, yeah, I love the pick, and he's a guy that I think folks are going to get tremendous returns from because he was a low-end wide receiver 4 because of the unknown.
By the way, maybe that's the storyline of Lombardi winning the Lombardi in his home stadium. Like, maybe that's an omen for the Chargers for Super Bowl 56 if they keep on going. Give you one reason to bench. This is where Mike and I differ. Clyde Edwards-Helaire. My one reason is this, is I think that the Chiefs are going to tell the Ravens, all right, score 35, score 40 against us, because we're going to score that many, and we're going to just keep the pedal to the metal. And go ahead, Lamar Jackson, with your weapons, do what you got to do. But I think it's going to be the Patrick Mahomes show on Sunday night, as they just try to score as many points as possible, knowing that the Ravens aren't going to be able to keep up.
I like that narrative. That'll make a very easy game to put on a second screen and start to watching games that I missed earlier in the day.
Well, I was going to start a new segment. Give me 5 reasons why I have a headache, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire would also be in that category. But that will be from another day. So I have to just give you one reason to bench a guy, and that's the reason. And again, I'm trying to stay true to the segment. I don't want to give you any other reasons, but I'm just trying to stay true to it. I think that the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes' arm are what are going to win in Baltimore on Sunday.
I dig that. 17 touches in week 1, total of 72 yards, a measly 7.2 for you. Hey, 10.2 in your PPR leagues. But yeah, I'm looking for just that one slip tackle as this game gets away and potentially gets ugly. I know Baltimore will play with heart. I just don't think they have the horses given all the injuries on both sides of the ball to keep up here.
3-point conversion to wrap this episode up. Mike and I give you 3 points to take into week 2. Maybe roster moves, maybe pickups, maybe just something that may pop in our mind. Mike, what's your 3-point conversion for week 2?
First off, waiver philosophy, because I thought you'd be entertained by this. Guillotine league that I'm in, Dan. I spent $957 of my $1,000 budget in week 1.
Jeez.
Because going in, it's first time I've done a guillotine league. So you're going in blind trying to figure out, all right, what's the ceiling? Because
yes,
you got stars at the disposal, right? As the team goes to the graveyard. And the team that lost in the league that I'm in had Josh Allen, Justin Jefferson, Ezekiel Elliott, Elijah Mitchell was a pre-agent, so, you know, waiver wire, just regular pickup, but also Dallas Goedert and so on. So when it came down to it, it's like I put in bids thinking if nothing else, I'll force other people to spend their money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough.
And instead, I spent a lot of money. And so now it becomes the, you know, for your waiver philosophy, you know, try to figure out now you've got 1 week of activity, whether it be a guillotine league or just one with a regular free agent acquisition budget. And if you know the other people in your league then and you've played together, then maybe you already kind of have a good idea of how people spend their money. But certainly for me, it was a wide-eyed experience. And look, it achieves one of the other purposes in the waiver philosophy that I've preached forever. It's like, better a guy rot on my bench than be in a lineup to beat me. So fair even enough. If I don't play a couple of those guys and it's money spent, they're not going to beat me. And if I go down, I went down swinging because I can't take those $1,000 of fictional money with me. Maybe I can apply that to my life too and just start spending haphazardly as we go. Number two, the Bucks run it. Bucks Falcons. Here's the thing though. You're going to have a lot of anxious moments watching them throughout the season. Because outside of Tom Brady, week to week, I don't know that you're going to know who your big scorer is going to be. You saw Godwin. You saw Antonio Brown. You saw Gronkowski. They all got fed in week one. And maybe they do here in a plus matchup, plus maybe, against Atlanta. But it's one of those week to week, you're going to have some stressful moments. We've talked about Mike Evans before.
I'll even say this. I think that Ronald Jones could have a game for the simple fact of nobody wants to play Ronald Jones this week because they saw what happens when he fumbles in week one. And you don't want to take that risk of if he puts the ball on the turf, he's not going to see the field again. And even though Bruce Arians gave him a vote of confidence in saying he's going to be our starter, Leonard Fournette started the game on Thursday night against Dallas a week ago. So what is really going on here? I think that there's an opportunity for Ronald Jones even, but I just don't have enough guts to play him.
No, I concur. I've got a league where, you know, you can start three running backs or three wideouts or add the second tight end, you know, basically the configuration of those. And he's sitting there as the third or fourth, and it's like, do I have the guts to roll back with him? Because it really is such a good matchup. And let's face it, we watched Leonard Fournette try to catch the ball out of the back. They targeted him seven times. That was painful every time. Every damn time. And if, for folks that didn't watch the game, because, you know, you and I doing radio as we do, Dan, how many times did you hear that, well, Brady had two interceptions? Like, yeah, one off of Fournette's hands and the other was a Hail Mary. The end of a hat. But you know what? Believe who you want to believe. And bosses pay who you're going to pay. And finally, don't bail on your studs, .. yet. It's one data point. One data point in a schedule. And usually, as we know, the NFL loves their marquee matchups. So we had a couple of surprises. And we had a couple of huge disappointments and already starting to see the narratives surrounding guys like Ryan Tannehill or Captain Kirk Cousins, who had a great yardage total, but overall they were inefficient in their game against Cincinnati. So you get down to it. We're not bailing yet. But, it's a short leash because just like in the regular NFL, Dan, you go down 0-2. It's time to start making some changes.
Yeah, and there's there are a few teams that don't want to go down 0-2 to start this season just because of where the division plays out, maybe future schedules, and honestly, maybe their schedule to start the season wasn't too tough, and it's telling us a little bit more about that team that maybe they wanted to realize. All right, my three-point conversion, no garbage time for Jacksonville. I touched on this a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence ended up with a fantasy day against Houston. That's not going to happen against Denver. DJ Chark's not going to save your day on his three catches at the end of – it's not going to happen against the Broncos. Don't play the Jaguars thinking like, well, they're bad. They're just going to have garbage time. It's not going to happen against Denver. Pointsapalooza, I had two really good candidates that I think could have an opportunity, but I think Pointsapalooza is in Arizona. Minnesota going up against the Cardinals. Play as many guys as you can from that matchup because I think that points are going to be aplenty. Finally, Mike, this one's for you. You better Kmet. Yeah, I picked up Cole Kmet this week for the Bears.
Nicely done.
I think that you could see a little bit more from him and even getting into the end zone against the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday.
Kept seeing the Jimmy Graham trotting out there. It's like, all right, 85's your guy. Throw the ball to him. Yeah. Stop pretending. Look how much bigger he is, and he's just physically imposing. And for Andy Dalton and that offense, you want to move those chains? There you go. Find him. Post him up.
Jimmy Graham looked like a 55-year-old Jimmy Graham in his uniform on the field. Yeah. Like, it's just like, wow, this is – I mean, he was magnificent. I don't want to rain on his career, but I just saw
him. No, he's had a great career.
Yeah.
It's at the end.
Yes, I agree.
And leave it at that. And the one thing, you know, and look, I could do 90 minutes on Matt Nagy, game management and player distribution. Just last year, like, he should have learned in the offseason. Like, I think there were at least five games where he came out and he was asked about Kmet and his role, and it's like, yeah, we got to use him more. So someone just needs to put those on a loop and just say, look, you said this in week one. You said this in week five. You said this in week seven. And just be consistent with it, because the target should be there.
You said that you could talk 90 minutes for Matt Nagy. That will be on a different podcast, because this podcast is about to come to an end, except for one final thing. And I'm sending this on your phones to Lee DeLapp, our executive producer, and you, Mike Harmon.
Yeah.
You know I collect mini helmets.
I do, yeah.
And there's a special one that I was able to add to the collection. Ooh. And it's a mini helmet of a team that lasted only one day. I was able to get a hold of the 1991 San Francisco 49ers new logo that was so widely ravaged by the fans. They hated it so much that the 49ers just changed back to the other one. They tried to make like this unveiling and this new thing. Like, oh, yeah, gosh. Oh, by the way, we have a new uniform with a new helmet logo. It lasted a day, and then the 49ers went back to the interlocking SF, and it's a piece of history. I put it up on Instagram, where you're going to see pictures of golf courses, mini helmets, and my son. But Byergrams is where you can see it. I'll probably put it up on Twitter as well, at Dan Byer on Fox on Friday. But
oh,
that's where you
that.
Can see the newest edition. I love the history. Not a 49ers fan, but I put it on Instagram. I love the history of that helmet for one day.
Do you think they hated that helmet design more than the crazy crab for the Giants? Or new Coke? I mean, there you go. There's your medal stand.
Get Mike Harmon on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Byer on Fox. We wish you many, many great successes in week two. Can't wait to hear about them. Let us know your questions. We'll answer as many as we can via social media. And we will talk to you when week two has concluded. Be well. Good luck in week deuce. Talk to you later.